A Pokemon Nuzlocke is a set of rules that turn a normal playthrough of Pokemon into a hardcore playthrough of Pokemon. You're only allowed to catch the first Pokemon you see per route, and if any of them faint, they actually don't live anymore, and you can never use them again. The game I will be Nuzlocking will be Pokemon Ruby. Not because I'm copying Jaden, but because Gen 3 is my favorite generation, and out of the three games, Ruby was the one I played as a kid and bought with my own money. It was $40. Imagine paying that much for a copy of the game now. Also, full disclosure, I've seen other PokeTubers who have a deep, uncanny knowledge of this game and use calculators to make the best, most optimal plays, but I'm not quite at that level yet, so I might make choices that some could consider suboptimal.
I thought grass was, like, super effective against water. Why is he super effective against me?
But if you can forgive me and look past all that, then let's get out of this truck and start our adventure.
Let's see. Someone's already picked Torchic, and when I played this as a kid, I picked Treecko. So that means we're left with Kipmud!
After defeating my rival's Treecko, I headed to Oldale Town and caught my first Pokemon that would be joining our team, Floof the Poochyena.
I'm guessing naming Pokemon after pets is very common in Nuzlocke.
By the way, this is how Floof's very first fight went.
Oh! Oh!
Oh my god.
Hey! Do you want to learn how to catch Pokemon?
No. I'm good.
Well, that's too bad. First, you want to get him weak by throwing tiny rocks at him.
Traveling through Route 104, I caught
a Zigzagoon.
Igzy the Zigzagoon. I'm probably not going to train her up or anything, but she will be useful teaching useless HMs to.
What's that, Igzy? You have an ability where you pick up random objects? And you picked up a revive? Oh, Igzy. I can't use these.
Wandering through Petalburg Woods, some guy asked me if I'd seen any Pokemon named
Shroomish.
The main reason Gen 3 is my favorite is because the best Pokemon ever, Breloom, makes his debut in this game. Why, if I found a Shroomish in this forest, I would probably react like this.
This guy was being truthful.
I named Shroomish Goat because not only is he the greatest of all time, but because I was also working on this other video about goats, so I had a lot of goats on the mind. We made it to Rustboro Town and challenged Roxanne, the rock-type gym leader, but thankfully we picked the water starter, so, you know, Kidmup, do your thing. I caught a Talo on Route 116, and keeping with the naming Pokemon after pets theme, I named him RE2. Not to spoil anything, but don't get too attached to RE2, Jaden. We sailed to Juford Town and saw that the second gym was a fighting-type gym, so that meant
fighting type weakness.
It was RE2's time to shine.
He's like actually a higher level. I didn't like that. He's too high of a level.
Despite being a lower level, we decided to wing it and managed to defeat everyone's Pokemon, only having to tap out at Brawly's Makahuita, which Kidmup mopped the floor with.
Hey, when did you start walking on two legs, Kidmup?
The next HM we learn is this terrible move, Flash. The only thing Flash is good for is lighting up a dark cave that technically isn't even required to progress through the game if you know where you're going. I, however, do not. Currently, Goat is the only one on the team who can learn Flash. But I'm like 80% sure once a Pokemon learns an HM move, they can't unlearn it. So I really don't want to teach this S-tier Pokemon an unforgettable F-tier move. Oh boy, an Abra! I bet he can learn Flash. Oh boy, a Zubat! Okay, I'm kind of fudging the rules here. This Zubat wasn't technically the first Pokemon I saw on this route, but does it even count as an encounter if all you do is look at a Pokemon and then they teleport away?
Excuse me?
Look, I just need this useless Pokemon to learn this unrequired move. Zubat, I'm calling you Mr. Flash and immediately teaching you...
No!
Goat, you can learn Flash.
Yay! After clearing out Team Magma from a museum, we were ready to take on Watson, the electric-type gym leader. Luckily, we picked the water-ground starter, so... Kidmup, do your thing.
Now what?
Do I go here?
Here?
How did I get here?
During my wandering, both the Pokemon I named after pets evolved into bigger versions of themselves, and Goat learned Headbutt.
Can I get rid of Flash?
No!
Hey, lady, I'm kind of lost, so I'm entering random houses and asking NPCs where I should go.
Oh, you have harbor mail? I'll trade you that for my coin case.
Coin case?
You know, for gambling.
Gambling? Listen, I don't have a problem. The reason I'm this excited is because one of the prizes you can win at the casino is a Pokemon. A Pokemon that may help me build the perfect team. So, before I checked what the prizes actually were, I bought 500 coins for a measly 10,000 Pokédollars.
Just TMs? Just dolls? I just wasted a lot of money, didn't I?
Good news, though. Goat evolved into his perfect form and learned Mach Punch.
Right.
Eventually, I talked to the right NPC, taught Iggy Rock Smash, and while exploring a fiery path, I caught my first fire-type Pokemon.
Okay.
Numel.
Let's go, man!
Even though Numels can be found in the desert, have a big hump on their back, and evolve into something called Camerupt, for some reason, I never looked at this Pokemon and thought, Camel. I always thought, Fire Cow. So that's why I named her Cooked Beef. Then, on Route 114, we encountered a Zangoose.
Hello!
I have no clue what this Pokemon does, but it looks way cooler than all the oddishes and tiny birds I kept running into, so it had to be awesome. Cooked Beef, the 9 levels you have on this goose are more than enough to weaken it. Hit him with an ever-
Oh, please don't. Oh!
Cooked Beef! So, my only fire type died to a quick attack that did 50 damage. Zangoose, or should I say Beef Eater, you can join the team for now, but just know, we could have killed you at any point. It was a challenge not to kill you. We headed up a mountain and fought Maxie, the leader of Team Magma, who had his own Floof Pokemon, which Goat took care of, and he had his own evolved Cooked Beef. I sure wish I had one of those on the team. Hey, Beef Eater, why don't you make yourself useful and fight that Crobat? Okay, that's kind of cool. As we headed down the mountain, who did I encounter but...
Who's the new Pokemon?
Another Numel. Immediately, I abandoned Beef Eater to make room for... Return of King. Before we take on gym number 4, I think I figured out a way to get Goat to forget the move Flash without having to beat him over the head with a 2x4. A little Pidgey told me that Goat was about to learn a new move at his next level. So, by placing him in the Pokemon daycare and doing some light cardio outside, he'll level up, learn the new move, and forget Flash. And my plan worked like a charm.
Yeah.
It really sucks that this is the only way to get Pokemon to forget an HM move. You'd think they'd have some, I don't know, a move deleter NPC or something. Gosh. Now you'd think that since I picked the water starter, that the fire type gym wouldn't be an issue. But it was. Floof and I quickly learned why biting lava was a bad idea.
Okay!
Thankfully, Kidmup, who I don't know why I didn't send out first, took out both of Flannery's Slugmas with no issue. But then, she sent out Torkoal. Even though Kidmup was using a super effective move, he only did this much damage. Meanwhile, Torkoal's Body Slams were doing this much damage. And paralyzing us! Okay, Goat, I know you're the goat, but you understand why you can't fight a fire turtle, right? RE2, looks like you're up. Finish her off with a steel wing!
Ah! Dude!
RE2! No! What do we do? None of you are great choices. What I really need is a turn to heal up Kidmup, but... Hey, Iggy. Are you aware of the concept... taking one for the team? Given the dire circumstances, this felt like the best choice. Sorry, Iggy. With Kidmup healed, we managed to get Torkoal's health really low,
But then, Kidmup refused to finish the fight because he was, in his words, immobilized by love. Kidmup, I know you're letting this turtle body slam you on purpose, and you're sick for it!
Do you really think we have a future together?
Okay, Goat, I know this is a fire turtle, but she's mostly using body slams. Could you please punch this turtle's head off without falling in love?
We earned our fourth gym badge, but it wasn't without some casualties. RE2 and Iggsy, we wouldn't have made it this far without you. Thanks for everything. We traveled into a sandstorm where I picked up two Pokemon, this fossil, and this weird Pokemon I've never seen before, Baltoy.
Alright, King, my second chance at a fire type. I know this isn't your natural habitat, but why don't we train here in the desert for a bit? Oh, you found a Baltoy. I just caught one of those. I'm not sure what its moves are, though.
Red nuts.
God!
Okay, team. I know everyone is upset this thing shares a species with the Pokemon who blew up King, but it possesses psychic abilities that I believe could be very useful. So please everyone give a warm welcome to King Eater. No one step on it. We headed back to Petalburg City and faced gym number 5, my dad. Also, I brought Odd One-ish just in case we had another Iggsy-type situation.
Am I an integral member of the team?
You sure are, bud. Despite a few close calls...
Who? Dude! 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 Finish him off. No!
Everyone, including Odd One-ish, made it out alive.
Oh my god.
Good thing we have free healthcare. I don't know what I'd do if someone took away my free healthcare. Not right now, Goat. Across the water on Route 118, I caught Pikachu the Electrike.
Great.
I don't know, he's electric like Pikachu, and his head kind of looks like pickles, so... Whatever, having an electric type on the team is huge. After inspecting all the Pokemon I had, I figured Mr. Flash's flying poison moves could be useful. So I evolved him into Golbat, and then... Here you go, daycare lady!
Alright, my favorite Pokemon, who wants some ice cream? Gosh, I love you guys. I couldn't ask for a better team right here.
At Fort Tree City, we were ready to take on Winona, the flying-type gym leader. Wait, this weird lizard's blocking our path. Kidmup, can you... Oh, cool, you're back on four legs again. Also, Pikachu, why are you blue? The only thing that stood between me and Winona was this incredibly hard two-piece puzzle.
All right, through this. Oh, figured it out.
Pikachu was able to spark Winona's Swellow, and Kidmup, through sheer willpower, tanked all of Altaria's earthquakes, narrowly avoiding death by 8 hit points. Good work, Kidmup. Pikachu, you know what to do. I found a TM for Ice Beam on an abandoned ship, and... King Eater, you can learn Ice Beam? I'm sorry it's taken me this long to realize how awesome of a Pokemon you are. You know, King Eater, with you on the team, I think we'll be okay without a fire type. I entered Lily Cove City, and my rival wanted a rematch. Kidmup knocked out her Swellow, no problem, but then she sent out Grovyle. Ooh, I know the perfect matchup for this. King Eater, why don't you show this grass type that new move you learned?
Dude! Ah! Are you going to use the hyper potion? No! No!
I can't believe I got that upset at losing a Pokemon that before this challenge, I had never even considered playing with. If any members of the Claydol lover community are watching... I'm sorry, I didn't know he hated grass. All right, team, we're not fighting any more gyms until each one of you is in peak physical shape. Floof, why haven't you evolved into Houndoom yet? What about this fossil? Is this fossil any good? We picked the plant one. We got the plant. What about Mr. Flash? Has anyone seen Mr. Flash? Why hasn't that loser evolved yet? Hey, buddy. So listen. We're friends, right? You know, Goat had to stay in the daycare once. Yeah, it was to forget the move Flash. Look, Mr. Flash, I know I technically shouldn't have even caught you, and I named you after a garbage move I thought you could learn, but I want you to evolve so you can be the best version of you on the team. Don't you want to join the team? I have this soothing bell you can hold on to. Welcome to the team, Mr. Flash. With the team stronger than ever, I surfed my way to an island that had a Pokemon graveyard inside a tall building, and for the first time ever, I could actually grieve with the other trainers. That was a great battle, dude.
Yeah, it was. Here's some money.
So Kidmup was holding an amulet coin, so you actually owe me 600. We defeated more Team Magma grunts at the top of the tower, and on our way down, I caught what I thought was going to be a super awesome Pokemon, but turned out to be a little disappointing.
Let's go!
My third chance set a fire type, my son, the Vulpix, which I immediately evolved into Ninetales. Why was she a disappointment? I don't know. You'd think a fire type would have no problems defeating a Gloom, but alas... I'm not saying Ninetales is a lame Pokemon. I'm saying mine specifically was. Floof and Kidmup easily cleared the Psychic Gym with Shadow Ball and Surf, and with that, we just have one more gym before we... Is the sun on fire? So I haven't really been paying attention to the story, and now the legendary Pokemon Groudon is angry. And as much as I would have liked to have Groudon on the team, I never found the Master Ball, so we're not risking it. Oh, hey, Wallace. Oh, you're the water-type gym leader? Oh, I hope my fighting grass Pokemon will be okay. No, you don't have to fight the Celio. I'll get Floof to do that. And with our eighth gym badge, we could finally travel through Victory Road and face the Elite Four.
Aren't you forgetting something?
I don't know how you want me to respond to that. This is it. Our final challenge. Each one of you has trained very hard. And as a reward, you'll each be receiving a piece of candy.
You get a candy. You get a candy. You get a candy. You get a candy. You get a candy. And you get a candy. This is it. This is gamer moment to the max.
Kidmup and Goat were able to finish off Sydney's Pokemon with their water, ice, and fighting moves. And my two dogs, Pikachu and Floof, crunched and bit all of Phoebe's ghost Pokemon. Pikachu might be cursed, though. Against Glacia, my son finally stopped being a disappointment and fire blasted her Glalie. Then I tried to get Goat to drain her Celio, forgetting he didn't like ice.
Okay.
Ice and birds, those are his two big no-nos. Luckily, Kidmup was able to earthquake the rest of her Pokemon. Now it was time for the fourth member of the Elite Four, Drake. His Altaria was defeated by Kidmup and Floof, but they both took some damage. Against his Flygon, I sent out my son.
Okay, what about Fire Blast? You're green.
Ah! Then Flygon dug a hole in the ground, but by the time he came up, Mr. Flash was waiting for him and took him out with a fly. For Drake's next Flygon, I sent out Goat.
I don't think... because he doesn't like birds, and Flygon's a dragon?
Yeah, Flygon wasn't a bird, but I forgot a very important aspect about dragons.
Give him my dynamic punch. Nope, okay.
Oh, no! Oh, he knows flamethrower.
Fire and poison, those are his other two no-nos. Instead, Floop and Pikachu crunched Flygon's head off, and then I used Kidmup's last blizzard on Salamence.
Okay, I'm gonna need this blizzard to hit. Please? Yes! Yes! Yes!
We had done it.
Oh my goodness.
We had cleared four champions with some very close calls, but we are all still alive. Now it was time to face the fifth member of the Elite Four. What, you didn't know about the secret fifth boss that's in every Pokemon game? We had one more challenger. Steven. Steven sent out a Skarmory, which was the perfect lightning rod for Pikachu, then Kidmup took out Aggron with Surf, and my son defeated Cradily with Iron Tail. Then Steven sent out a Metagross, and things got messy. I thought Kidmup's Surf would be super effective against this rock with legs. Turns out it wasn't.
Okay, here's what we're gonna do. I have an idea. Kidmup, if you can last another hit, that would be amazing.
Oh, Hyper Beam!
Kidmup, my starter Pokemon, had been taken out.
Okay.
At least he got Metagross's health low enough that Floof could easily finish them off.
That's it.
Then Steven sent out his own King Eater, which I knew from personal experience they hated getting crunched.
I know this Pokemon. He hates getting crunched. I don't care about your special defense. You're getting crunched. It's probably because the special defense went up.
Floof eventually took down Claydol, even though Steven used a full restore on it 3 separate times.
Of course. Of course you were.
Stop it!
Which I get, man. I'm part of the Claydol lover community, too. Next was the last Pokemon we needed to defeat. Armaldo. One hit from its ancient power badly injured Floof. So for this final fight, I sent Goat to finish him off. Goat, because he's so awesome, poisoned Armaldo just by standing next to him, and then promptly sky uppercutted him straight in the jaw, just barely knocking him out. Armaldo was clinging onto life when the unthinkable happened. Armaldo knew a bird move.
No! No!
Goat had made it so far into our journey, only to faint inches away from the finish line. I could have sent out a level 5 Zigzagoon and still would have won, because Armaldo died to poison on the very next turn.
The poison's gonna finish it off! Right? I didn't even have to... No! No! Not Goat!
By all accounts, Goat had defeated Armaldo, but he didn't make it! And neither did Kidmup! That was my starter and my favorite Pokemon! No! No, I don't want this trophy! I want Goat and Kidmup! Colleagues, friends, Wally, we gather together to honor 2 of the bravest Pokemon I know. One of them from the humble town of Little Root, and the other from a patch of grass in Petalburg Woods. Together, they faced gyms, rivals, and a plethora of wild Pokemon. And when the final challenge came, they didn't back down.
This sucks! I hated that!
And that's how my first Nuzlocke went.
Dude!
Through Wurmples, dude. Nothing, dude.
Dude!
Oh,
dude! Stop falling in love! No!
Tackle's so bad, dude.
Fine is Lada, dude.
Don't give him a chance to recover, dude.
Dude,
stop it. Bash their skull in, dude.
That was my psychic ice type, dude.
As some of you may know, Jaden has already made a video about the Scribble Showdown tour me, her, Domix, Ross, and Aaron went on in 2019. But we toured again, baby, last November! We were scheduled to go earlier, but then something came up. For this round of touring, we did more than double the amount of shows than last time, so that means this video will be twice as good as Jaden's. So, touring during a global pandemic was a lot of fun. Anytime we had a day off, everyone on the crew had to take a rapid test, and people coming to the shows needed a proof of vaccine to get inside, and worst of all, we weren't able to say hi to people after the show. I know a lot of people waited outside in the cold for us to come out, only to see us at a distance load ourselves into the bus in our PJs, going, "Sorry! We're not allowed, we have to stay in our bubble!" Before the tour even started, we had a big problem. Domix couldn't get his Canadian visa approved to come work in the US, so he was unable to tour with us. But luckily, we found a sub for Dom, someone who loved maple syrup just as much as Dom and was willing to drop everything and tour with us for a whole month, Emily from the channel Emmerichu. And she killed it on stage. Like, straight up murder. She was super funny, artistic, and she drew these awesome pictures of all of us and just... I'm not crying, shut up! When Ross met Emily, the very first thing he said to her was, "Hello, touring's going to be so fun, just don't sleep the wrong way on the bus, cause if it crashes, you'll break your neck and die painfully. Also, you're not allowed to poop on the bus." I would know. Fortunately, no one pooped or broke their neck during the whole tour. And I still haven't pooped. Your body adapts to crazy things. During the last tour, Ross couldn't control his bowels, but this time, he couldn't control his brain. He had what he describes as intense, debilitating nightmares that felt like a Nintendo 64 rumble pack was added to the experience. And if you want to hear more about what Ross's twisted mind thought up of when he was unconscious, then go check out the video he made on his channel. But not now, because I'm talking. So, on this tour, I wanted to be better at taking photos. You know, the reason I don't have a vlogging channel is because I forget to film anything that happens on my trips. And as I was taking a photo of a venue, I found out that my phone could do something called Photosphere. Photospheres are full 360-degree photos that show you everything at every angle. Here's a picture of the venue, and here's what the ground looked like. They're the superior way of taking photos. I took a photosphere of every venue. Hey, you know what else is round and cool? That's a great question. It's the type of question we got asked in our VIP Q&A panel. Before every show, the five of us would go out and do a Q&A panel for the people who bought VIP tickets. And 93.75% of the Q&As were absolutely fine. One time, someone asked a question that was directed at their fiancé, and it was, "Will you marry me?" Oh, I'm gonna take a photosphere of this. Hold on, you'll need to stay still for like 2 minutes. I wish that question was directed at me. I would have loved to kiss someone on tour. Anyways, one of the cues we got was a little odd. I'm not gonna tell you which show this was at, but it was in Florida, because of course it was. There was one guy in the audience wearing a suit who was reaching his hand so high up that his butt was out of his chair and he was visibly shaking with excitement. So given how urgent this guy was being, Aaron called on him, but now we know not to call on those types of people. You in the suit. The guy stands up screaming, "Yes! Thank you!" And he goes on a long-winded explanation saying, "Look, I'm 26 years old, I'm not getting any younger, I want to do what you do!" Okay. What's your question? My question is that I want to make a bet with all of you that in 1 year I'm going to be up on stage with you performing at Scribble Showdown! I wanted to say, "I bet $1 million because we're not holding auditions." But instead I said, "I love your enthusiasm, that's great. But don't quantify your success into a certain time frame, because that's only going to set yourself up for failure. Especially on the internet, growing an audience takes time and luck. Nothing is ever guaranteed." And we told him good luck and started answering other cues. And then at the end of the Q&A, as we were walking off stage, the guy screamed out, "See you in a year!" And that made me upset because he didn't listen to anything I just said. To his credit, he'll definitely be remembered. Not in the way he wants to, but remembered. And he's coming on tour with us next year, so, you know, be on the lookout for that. Another fun fan interaction that happened was in the freezing state of Chicago. We arrived in Chicago a day early, so me and Emily decided to walk to The Bean. Now, I have been told that The Bean is not called The Bean, and the artist actually wants it to be called something else. So as we walked up to The Bean, I kept chanting, "It's The Bean, it's The Bean." I took some photospheres, and as we started to leave, we passed another group who were chanting, "It's The Bean, it's The Bean." And I thought, wow, those guys are annoying. But then they made eye contact with me through The Bean's reflection and were like, "Oh my god, are you James?" And I said, "Who?" And then someone saw Emily and said, "Oh my god, it's Jaden!" And I started laughing, and I pointed to my Scribble Showdown jacket. "No, no, no, it's this one, not this one, this one." But I don't think they understood, because when we were taking a group photo, one of them said, "Jaden should go in front." And I said, "Yeah, Jaden, come over here." So on the last tour, Aaron had just gotten into Magic the Gathering, which is a card game I've been playing longer than him. Back then, I had to explain some of the rules and show him the pro gamer strats. But during 2019 to 2021, Aaron got really into Magic. He knows the name of every single card and what it does. Like, I'll pull a card from a pack and he'll be like, "Oh, nice, Branching Evolution. That's like a worse doubling season. But you could combo it with the Colossal Dreadmaw and the Truffle Mixer. No, the Truffle Mater, and get Gary out in turn 5. Gary's what the community calls the Gray Apostle." What? At one of the venues we stayed at, I noticed that there was a random 2 of diamonds glued to the ceiling. So I says to Aaron, "Hey Aaron, say a card, any card."
7 of clubs.
"No, lower."
3 of clubs.
"Lower."
2 of clubs.
"Okay, now change the suit."
2 of diamonds.
"Now, you chose that card, right?"
"Okay."
"Look up." "What?" But then Aaron bought a deck of playing cards and performed a card trick that forced someone to pick the two of diamonds, and then Aaron would tell them to look up saying, "Is that your card?"
What?
And because of that, Aaron started to learn other card tricks and would try them out on people. So I don't want to take any credit for Aaron's hobbies, but I totally got him into magic, and I got him into magic. While we were on tour, we got invited to be a part of Jacksepticeye's hashtag ThankMiss livestream that was raising money to build homeless shelters. And on stream, Aaron had this crazy idea that if we reached our goal, he would kiss one of us. And then we reached our goal, and then nothing notable happened. If this show sounds like a lot of fun and you want to come see all of us play drawing games live, and you live in Europe, then great news! We have a Europe tour scheduled for April. Get your tickets on the Scribble Showdown website, and next time we plan on touring in the States again, I'll let you know. But for now, thank you everyone who came to a show, unless you live in Brooklyn. Thank you all for watching, and thank you everyone on the Real Good Touring team who babysat us for a month and made this show possible. Touring with you was a blast. And now, I'm going back to sleep on my tour bus coffin, facing the correct way while repressing my urge to poop. And golly, I sure do hope I don't get any nightmares. Right, bunk buddy Ross? Ross?
I haven't slept in 11 days.
All right, James. Are you ready for this?
Bad, got that.
I was going to say, that's only happening one time.
Down! I'm crazy! Ah!
This brick is alive.
Not convinced? Well, what if I did this?
I'm gonna do a backflip!
That's gonna look so cool, Brickathy!
What are you boys doing?
Brickathy's gonna do a backflip, Grandma!
Are you convinced now? Did the brick feel more alive? I mean, sure, it's still a brick that can't move on its own, but maybe because I put googly eyes on it and gave it a family, you can connect with this brick, and it made you feel emotions. Convincing you that something inanimate is animate is the main goal of the animate ore. They're nothing more than deranged frauds. For the last century, animators have innovated new techniques and styles to this medium, taking it from a spinning wheel that doesn't even use electricity to Spider-Verse. And today, I'm going to talk about all the processes and innovations that have brought the medium of animation to right now. But first, let's go all the way back to the beginning of film, when it was all black and white and people had to put up text whenever they talked. Early on, filmmakers discovered a very simple trick to make anything appear alive in front of a camera. And that simple trick was called You're filming something, and then stop the camera, and then move the thing slightly, capture a new image, move the thing again, and continue to do that a tedious amount of times. On the film, that thing now magically looked like it move on its own. And with this technique, you could make literally anything appear to be moving. Anything. But some filmmakers took this art form to an extreme level and created whole characters out of clay and a posable metal wire system called an armature. Now animators can sculpt unique characters that bend and pose in much more believable ways. With stop motion, you don't need to hire a real dinosaur or giant monkey to make a movie about a dinosaur or giant monkey. I'm sorry you didn't get the job, Phil. You know, I just had a crazy idea. What if we made our entire puppet's head interchangeable? Now they can make any facial expression and mouth shape possible. We will have to sculpt out hundreds of different heads, though, but, I mean, come on, that'll be fun. That's why we're extreme, baby! Stop-motion movies are still being made and enjoyed to this day, and while new technology does help make the overall process easier, animators are still using the same techniques that were used on King Kong back in the 1920s, where they carefully pose out a character's every movement frame by frame. In order. Stop motion is a medium that I can't even begin to understand how they do, let alone make it look good, you know? Having a stop motion character in gravity-defying poses, making hundreds of different faces, is done solely to make the character feel more alive. And sometimes, to help sell the realism, animators will mimic quirks that only happen in live-action films. I always chuckle when I see a lens flare in an animated movie, 'cause like, Where did you come from? There's not even a camera lens. Unlike me, though, who's always got a camera rolling. Hey, how's it going? Uh-oh. Oh, no! Did you catch that? Did you see the lizard eating a bug? Ooh, we got him. Now let's rewind the clip and pause right here. This lizard moves so fast that the camera can't even capture its movements correctly, and he transmogrifies into an amorphic blob that barely even resembles a lizard. But do not fret, dear viewer. This is called motion blur, and it's absolutely natural. Fast-moving objects are hard to see in real life anyway, so this blurry blob only showing up for one frame actually helps sell the idea that this little guy is moving quickly. If you watch any movie frame by frame, you'll find motion blur everywhere, and you won't even notice. So how do animators who are taking hundreds of still photos handle this naturally occurring phenomenon with things in motion? Easy, they'll draw smear. Animators draw their own blurry blob frame to mimic fast movements. Bodies can stretch, arms can multiply. Basically, we can sneak in nightmares as long as it's only shown for one frame. Smears, while being very fun to draw, can look very weird and goofy on their own. But in the context of the whole shot, you barely even notice they're there. Okay, maybe now you'll notice them, but that's only because I pointed them out. And since animators are bad boys and don't play by the rules, they can make smears out of anything. Even in stop motion, we can sculpt a physical smear frame like how they did in Leica's Paranorman, which, if you haven't seen, is going to be your new favorite movie. Smear frames can be used anytime, anywhere. Unless you were an animator in the 1920s and 30s and you didn't know about them back then. In that case, you would have been animating something called... In the 1920s and 30s, animators were still figuring out some core principles of animation. Turns out there's 12 of them. Smear frames were used sparingly during this time, with animators usually only drawing characters with multiple limbs to show fast movements. The stretchy, wacky, and spiritually ascending smears that you all know and love weren't really used until the 1940s. Rubber hose characters have noodly, almost hose-like limbs that bend in all sorts of anatomically defying ways. Look at Mickey Mouse's noodle arms that I can now legally show you. The reason characters look like this is because drawing noodle arms and not worrying about anatomy is easier to draw. But like, just because something has noodle arms doesn't mean it's bad, you guys. What these animators were able to accomplish with the technology, if you could even call it that, is nothing short of dark magic. And the very same studio that made Steamboat Willie wanted to push the envelope and show the world that animation could be more. It doesn't just have to be noodly characters with Pac-Man eyes. They were going to animate a realistic woman with proportional arms that don't move in weird, exaggerated ways. And oh god, her noodle arms are moving in weird, exaggerated ways. In 1934, Disney released a short called The Goddess of Spring, being their first attempt at animating a character with what was supposed to have real human anatomy. They still had a lot to learn, obviously. Now, animating a quote-unquote anatomically correct human is actually a much harder task than you might realize, and that's because of the uncanny valley. Get more and more human characteristics, we hit an interesting point right here when something looks almost like a human, but is just a little off. Our pattern recognition brains start setting off alarm bells and go, ugh, something is definitely wrong with that almost human. I am entering fight or flight right now. So if you're trying to make something look as close to a human as possible, but are just a tiny bit off, everything crumbles. The Goddess of Spring was still good practice for Disney because only 3 years later, they released the world's first fully animated feature film, Snow White. Can you really blame Disney for going 6 times over budget to make this movie? I mean, just look at how these human characters are moving. 10 years before Snow White, animated humans looked like this. So going from this to this in only 10 years? How? I can't get over how real these human characters look sometimes. Almost too real. Well, I think you're old enough to learn about the dangers of rotoscoping is the process of taking real-life footage and then manually tracing over every frame, resulting in an animation with unreal levels of realism. And I say unreal derogatorily. You're basically slapping a cartoon filter over live-action footage, but instead of simply slapping, you're spending multiple hours doing mindless and tedious drawing. Rotoscoping is not the same as filming a human actor and then later referencing that footage, like what Disney did for Sleeping Beauty or Alice in Wonderland or any movie ever, because animators use references all the time. People had figured out how to rotoscope other people long before Snow White. So of course Disney, who was trying to convey real human movement, rotoscoped some shots. The problem with rotoscoping is that we start to sneak our way back to the bottom of the uncanny valley. Animated characters often do and should break the laws of physics. They can squash and stretch into weird proportions and be drawn in unique and interesting poses. And look, Snow White is still a masterpiece of a movie. The rotoscoping is fine, you barely notice it. It's good, it's a good movie, and it made Disney a lot of money. Also, how did Walt animate these shots of things reflecting in the water in 1937? What, did they put special glass over paintings to make it look distorted or something? Who would be crazy enough to do that? If you made a whole movie entirely rotoscoped, what you end up with is Ralph Bakshi's The Lord of the Rings. Notice anything off about these characters' movements? Look at how Gandalf moved just a year ago in The Hobbit. Now, Lord of the Rings. Hobbit. Lord of the Rings. Almost every shot in this movie was rotoscoped, and the shots that weren't used live-action footage with a filter over it. I'm not saying that rotoscoping is bad. You just have to use it correctly. A character switching from traditionally animated to rotoscoped is incredibly funny, and always will be. The YouTuber Joel Havier makes very entertaining rotoscope skits that feel like a fever dream, and I mean that underogatorily. And a lot of music videos get away with rotoscoping because, admittedly, rotoscoping is a very cool visual. Now, I wish I could say the first Lord of the Rings movie was a hidden animation gem, but I don't know, it's not on my top 10, I'm sorry. It probably made a lot of nerds in the 70s happy, but thankfully The Lord of the Rings has been adapted into many other forms of media, like video games, Magic the Gathering cards, and anime.
Anime?
They're making a Lord of the Rings anime?
They're making a Lord of the Rings...
You thought Hollywood, California was the only place in the world making moving pictures? Japan's been making their own moving pictures too, and some of them are moving drawings. There are entire college courses on the history of anime, but you're not paying me tuition, so we're gonna have to skip over a couple things. A lot of early anime is now lost media because cinemas didn't preserve film back then, and an earthquake destroyed many studios in 1923. Some Japanese animators created shorts out of paper cutouts because buying thousands of celluloid sheets was too expensive, and they had some very unique character designs. And some Japanese animators took inspiration from Disney and made shorts that looked very similar to America's rubber hose characters. Then, by the 1940s, some major world events happened that got most of the world involved, and both American and Japanese animation studios were affected. But after all that, in 1948, one studio called Japan Animated Films, later bought out by Toei Animation, set out to be the Disney of the East, and they made cartoons about magical schoolgirls, and are still in business to this day and made some other less popular shows. One animator who quit working at Toei created his own company and made an anime based off his comic about a robot boy. Hey, I kinda like that art style of drawing humans with big expressive eyes. Let's do more of that. That same year, another studio made an anime about humans controlling giant robots. I wonder if that's going to inspire a whole new genre. And this guy was commissioned by American studios to make stop-motion Christmas movies like Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Meaning Rudolph is anime!
Nani?
By the 1960s, Japanese shows started airing on televisions all across the globe, and they continued to make unique and interesting stories with amazing animations that were beloved by billions of people and grew into extremely profitable franchises. Like, I'm talking the most profitable franchise. By the 1970s, Disney was still very much the animated movie gold standard, making big-budgeted movies with family-friendly values. Which is fine to do, kids love bright colors and talking animals that only cartoons can offer, but some studios realized that animation was a medium, not a genre, and made animated movies exclusively for adults. That's part of the reason why the first Lord of the Rings movie was entirely rotoscoped. It wasn't trying to be cartoony and over-the-top, it was trying to be
real and gritty. Animation could be anything for anyone of any age. But really, if you think about it, there hadn't been a new way of showing people moving drawings since those very early days of black and white stop motion. In stop motion, you take a picture, move a figure, take a picture, move a figure. In cell animation, you take a picture, move a cell, take a picture, move a cell. Everything's just been a series of pictures moved manually in front of a camera this whole time? Always has been.
You've got mail.
Oh. It says the entire animation and film industry is about to be flipped onto its head forever and ever. Yeah, right. I'm sure this whole computer thing is just... ever-increasing advancements of technology, we were able to achieve increasingly advanced... achievements, like putting a guy on the moon, and drawing silly little cartoons more efficiently. Gone are the days of having to physically draw everything out on paper and underpay a team of hundreds of pretty girls to hand-paint every frame. Now we can use this fancy new computer to render everything out for us. All we have to do is create a real-life mold of our real-life human hand, then draw 350 triangles onto that hand, then manually measure out the X, Y, and Z coordinates of 800 different data points. No, come on, this is gonna be so much faster. Put that pencil down. Now we just program in a couple of keyframes and we get... Huh. We still don't have the processing power to render everything out. Oh, I know. We'll just point this long exposure camera at the computer screen. Get these art supplies out of here. This is the future. And when everything's finished rendering, we'll get this. A whole human hand moving on its own without having to draw a single frame. This process is exactly what Utah University student Ed Catmull did in 1972. And while it might not have been more efficient than drawing everything out by hand, it showed that computers were capable of rendering out three-dimensional animations. This was made after we landed a man on the moon, by the way, so don't tell me this was CGI. As the computer's processing power grew exponentially, more and more filmmakers started seeing the benefits of using computer-generated images in movies. A decade after Catmull digitized his hand, films like Tron showcased characters racing on mind-boggling computer-generated light cycles. This might look... you know, bad by today's standards, but these graphics were something that audiences had never seen before. Plus, the movie takes place inside of a computer, so this is probably what people thought the insides of a computer looked like anyways. At the time, computers did a great job at creating rigid, geometric shapes, and animators used that to their advantage. Characters would still have to be animated traditionally on cells, but objects that weren't going to change shape, like black cauldrons, could now magically fly in circles around our characters. Disney really showed off the computer's rendering power during the climax of The Great Mouse Detective, when these two rodents fought each other inside a clock tower and all the spinning gears were generated by a computer. Animators can now make any complex shape move in a three-dimensional space without having to draw a single frame. I mean, you know, except for the characters, they still very much had to draw those. Computer graphics were here to stay as Disney integrated more of them into movies like these cars in Oliver and Company or Eric's ship in The Little Mermaid, and then they stopped using cells entirely. Starting with The Rescuers Down Under, Disney no longer used cells and made movies entirely digitally with a program called CAPS. So if you ever wanted to own a cell of Joanna the Lizard eating an egg, that's too bad because they don't exist. Which fucking sucks because Joanna was the best god lizard Disney ever made. Don't touch me! TV shows and anime still use cells till about the year 2000-ish, but eventually everyone switched to digital. Now to color a frame, all you had to do was... So computers were great at making rigid, non-flexible shapes, but has anyone ever tried to make... A group of computer scientists who were working for a small indie director named George Lucas were taking this art form to an extreme level and created whole characters completely generated by a computer. Then a small entrepreneur named Steve Jobs hired those computer scientists and made his own company, Pixar. Yes, Steve Jobs was one of the founders of Pixar, and he originally created the company to sell a high-end computer powerful enough to render 3D animations, but no one bought the computer because it cost $135,000. So the team scrapped the computer selling idea and just stuck with making computer-generated cartoons, but they soon discovered a unique problem.
The computer had a hard time getting textures right, and everything, including babies, ended up looking like it was made out of plastic. So the team's clever workaround this dilemma was to make a movie with the entire cast of characters actually made out of plastic. Or ants. You know, people don't know what ants are supposed to look like. It's fine. Pixar continued to develop new processes to get the computer to generate unique textures and lighting, like simulating human hair or fur, or lighting things in such a way to make everything appear underwater. No other studio was pioneering computer-generated images like Pixar was. And then in 2006, Disney bought Pixar. But I don't think Steve was too upset because 1 year later, he achieved his dream of selling a high-end computer. This time being a little more affordable. A little. Now, I want to squash any misconception that computers do all the animating. Animators still have to manually pose a character's body and facial expression off of a character's... build a complex system of nodes and bones that let them manually pose a character into any position possible. It's kind of like a digital stop-motion puppet, or an actual puppet without any of the strings. All CG characters are just their own complicated version of Pinocchio. Using character rigs is really the only way of animating things in three dimensions. But it's not like we can use rigs in 2D animation. Here in the second dimension, we don't have a fancy Z-axis. 2D animation can only be done by hand-drawing 24 new images every second. Except we don't, I lied. Even all the way back when characters were animated with paper and cells, animators wouldn't draw a whole new frame every frame. Usually, they would animate pieces of a character and paint each piece on its own cell. You remember Robin? They only drew one body and five different heads. But because cells are a physical object that get harder to handle the more you have, animators could only break a character up into two or three different pieces. But now, thanks to the computer, we can break up a character into as many pieces as we'd like four, or five, or 173! Have you ever played around with the free and revolutionary animation software Pivot Stick Figure Animator? If you're the type of person that says, "Oh, I suck at drawing. I can't even draw stick figures," then you're gonna love this program. On Pivot, you're given a pre-made stick figure or horse that have these joints that can be posed however you like. Each of these stick figure's limbs are just individual pieces that are connected in such a way that make it look like a stick figure. So to make these animations, we're not really drawing anything, we're just manually posing out a character like a digital puppeteer. I wasn't saying you can make a rig out of 173 pieces just to be funny. Because that's how many pieces I'm made out of. That's right, me! Even I'm a rig! And can I tell you a secret? Most TV shows use rigs too. Of course, hand-drawn traditional animation is still used to make these shows. It's not a lost art form or anything. But rigs are super useful at making still pretty high-quality levels of animation, but at a much cheaper cost. And as we all know, TV animation has to create more animation per budget. But maybe rig animation still isn't as cost-effective as you'd like. And maybe you're not a fan of the complicated puppet look, and you want something that looks more human. Well, there's one more animation process we can try, called motion. An actor inside one of these dorky ping-pong suits, a computer can pinpoint and record that actor's exact movements. Now we can take those movements, slap a cartoon character's model over it, and we get an animation that looks like... shit. Motion capture is the rotoscoping of 3D animation. It cuts costs, but the results are too human, and we're back at the bottom of the uncanny valley. That's why the kids from the Polar Express look so nightmarish, because they are following the exact movements of Tom Hanks. Yes, Tom Hanks, the adult man, did some motion capture for the small, nameless hero boy from the Polar Express. There's probably a reason we haven't made a fully motion capture cartoon in over 10 years. Because it looks weird. But I mean, that didn't stop one of these movies from winning an Oscar in animation. And before you ask, no, it wasn't Monster House or Tintin. It was Mars Needs Moms, duh. Just like rotoscoping, motion capture can be used correctly. Computer-generated characters acting side-by-side real human actors look decent. It's not that jarring that these creatures who exist in a live-action world are moving just like live-action people. And let's not forget all the VTubers who use motion capture technology to bring their jiggly assets to life. No matter what method someone uses to try and convince you that something else is alive, I think is incredibly cool, and I hope you think it's cool too. But maybe you don't think it's cool, and you don't care about animation, and you just put this video on in the background while you were cleaning. That's totally fine, I do that all the time. I just like learning about how all my favorite animated pieces of media get created, because it's not always the same process. And I think it's great that new technology is allowing anyone to express themselves in whatever way possible. A person expressing themselves. Those are the three key words here. From the big studios that are just now pioneering new and interesting styles with digital animation, to the indie studios that have access to incredible technology which allow anyone working from their bedrooms in their pajamas to create some truly masterpieces of animation. So, if you're the type of person that likes to trick people into thinking that something is alive, then you deserve all the respect in the world. In fact, here are some cool people that made the animation in this video possible. Hello, you just made it to the end of this video. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm still trying to figure out this VTuber model, so I'm over-enunciating my words. The technology behind this is beyond my comprehension. If you're still deciding what to get for the holidays, then great news. We have mystery boxes over on my website, so you can leave the deciding up to us. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm gonna go take a nap. Are you still watching? Oh yeah, she's coming back.
I hate you!
Oh! Well, next time, don't steal my Monopoly!
Ariana, give James your $200 you landed on his property.
No! He's in jail! I'm not gonna give money to a criminal! That's not how you...
Mommy, why is brother screaming?
Shut the fuck up, Sally. You don't get to talk after stealing my last railroad. I wish I was never born! Me too! You think I wanted this?
Hi. What you all just witnessed is the phenomenon known as Family Game Night. Family Game Night plays an important role in the household dynamic, as studies have shown that families who participate in activities together form closer bonds and stronger relationships with each other. So try setting aside some time to play board games with your family. And if they beat you, cut them out of your life forever. Okay, have fun, you guys.
I like board games. I guess any game that doesn't involve me getting up and moving around, I'm a huge fan of. Also, since I'm bad at everything and don't like playing games against someone who's better than me, I really love the games that don't require any type of skill, like the game Chutes and Ladders, which I just learned today has another name called Snakes and Ladders. And I'm going to call it that instead, because I'd rather draw snakes than chutes. In Snakes and Ladders, you have no free will. You're at the mercy of a single dice, and I love it. While I was looking up walkthroughs for Snakes and Ladders, I quickly learned that this game was made for preschoolers, which is probably why it's so simple. Or how about the game Sorry, which is the most unapologetic game I've ever played. There's some strategy in that game, but most of the time you're just getting revenge on the players who've wronged you. And the creators of Sorry knew this because the tagline of the game is Sorry, the game of sweet revenge. Which, if you think about it, is a pretty funny oxymoron. Aha! Take this! Sorry. I know how to play chess, but like most things, I'm not very good at it. Unless I'm playing against someone under the age of 4, I don't want to play that game. Because it shows everyone how bad I am at planning ahead. That's a game that's 100% strategy based. It's like the IQ test of board games. Beating someone in chess will put you more ahead academically than anyone with a Harvard degree. And you'll get more babes. However, there is one exception, and that is, it's okay to lose at chess if you're playing against a computer. Even if it's on easy mode. Computers are way better at planning ahead than anyone. Because I don't know how, but a human made a computer that can beat the world's best chess player, but the creator of the computer can't beat the world's best chess player. So I guess that means it's game over. We tried our best, but we've peaked. Whenever you beat a computer in chess, it was going easy on you. Imagine if we made a computer that could beat the world's best Snakes and Ladders player. I would pay money to see a Snakes and Ladders championship. And everyone watching knows that the person playing is just some Joe Schmo that acts like the world's best Snakes and Ladders player, but they're all still excited. And there's real snakes that you get to slide down? That would be amazing!
Sign me up.
While we're on the topic of chess, I want to tell you about this cool sport I discovered called chess boxing. This is an actual competitive sport where two players play chess for 3 minutes, then box each other for 3 minutes. And they keep switching between chess and boxing until someone either gets a checkmate, they run out of time playing chess, or they KO the other player. I love this sport because it combines two polar opposite games, and it's something that anyone can play. Brains over brawn? Try saying that after I sucker punch you in the... Oh, that was a good move. I'm gonna punch you so hard in the balls for that. I know I just said I was bad at chess, but if there's any YouTubers who want to challenge me to a chess boxing match, I will gladly take you to the ring, and we can charge people $12 just to watch. And we can end it in a draw. You know, so that way, you won't look bad in front of your fans. So Battleship, that's another board game, and it also got a big Hollywood movie based off of it. I haven't seen it, but I hope there's a scene where the captain of the ship goes, "Men, fire at D6? And then there's an explosion in the distance, and then Rihanna, who is actually in that movie, says, "Sir, the alien sent a message. It says, miss." And the captain goes, Someone write that down so we don't forget. And then there'd be an explosion at the back of their ship, and alarms start going off, and everyone on board starts freaking out except for the captain, and he goes, "Rihanna, send the aliens a message. Tell them... hit." Also, ask them if they think the situation would make a good board game. And if that scene is not in the movie, I hate it. Did anyone else collect a bunch of Pokemon cards, but never knew how to play the game? I don't think I met a single person who actually knew how to play the card game. Which was weird, because in my school, the card game was just as popular as the video games. Kids would always show off their collection of cards and binders, and everyone always wanted the highly coveted shiny Charizard card. You know which one I'm talking about. You know which one I'm talking about. You know which one I'm talking about! Unlike Yu-Gi-Oh!, which had dedicated episodes explaining why these 5 pieces of cardboard were expensive, the shiny Charizard was rare, not because it was good in the game, but because everyone agreed that it looked cool. But then when you ask someone, "Hey, do you want to play a game?" they would say, "Okay, I summon my Charizard in attack mode." Does anyone even know how to play the Pokemon card game? I bet none of these guys even know what they're doing. How'd this guy win? He didn't even call Uno. I can't be too hard on the Pokemon cards, because the card game I like is probably way more complicated than Pokemon. I don't know for sure, because, like I said, I don't know how to play the Pokemon card game, but my favorite card game is Neopets. I'm just kidding, that was a joke. Kind of. I did actually own a lot of Neopet cards. I don't remember exactly how to play. I do remember you have to get 21 points to win, which got me into playing blackjack. But it's okay that I don't remember how to play, because no one else is playing this game. I wanted to find some footage of a Neopet TGC championship, only to come to the disappointing realization that no Neopet championship exists, which is sad. So, if there's any YouTubers watching who want to fight my Scorchio, square up. Okay, but for real, the card game I like the most is Magic the Gathering. And fun little factoid, all 3 card games I've mentioned were created by the same company, Wizards of the Coast. Hey, is that a Monopoly reference? I've been playing Magic since 2007, and back then the game was a lot more simple. Look at some of these more recent cards. First, see how many words are on them? And if we flip them over, they merge into an even bigger card. What? If you showed these cards to my 11-year-old self, I would have lost my marbles. My favorite thing about Magic is when Dick Garfield, was first creating the game in 1993, he didn't really have an accurate way of testing the cards to make sure they're all fair and balanced, and he ended up creating some of the most overpowered cards in Magic. And players today refer to these cards as the Power 9, because there were 9 really good ones, which is why every single one of them is banned. Now, don't get me wrong, the Power 9 are good cards, but none of them are like, you win the game good. Take this one for example, Ancestral Recall. All it says is, draw 3 cards, or force opponent to draw 3 cards. Which is stupid that they added that last part. Why would you ever give your opponent 3 more cards to beat you with? Now, I know what you're thinking. Wait, a slightly better Pot of Greed, which is a card that allows me to draw 2 new cards from my deck and place them into my hand, is one of the top 9 most powerful Magic cards? Yeah, Pot of Greed is banned too. Games play such an important role in childhood, and here's what they all teach us. In Magic, if you're really good at what you do, no one will invite you to their tournament. Monopoly, white-collar crime is okay. Battleship, just guess and check. Snakes and ladders, if you see a ladder, climb it immediately. And no one cares about Neopets. Now, if you excuse me, I have to show this prison guard my coupon I have that lets me get out of jail anytime I like.
Hi, everyone. I'm here with Jaden Animations.
Hi.
Today we're going to be drawing Pokemon from memory.
And yay!
We're going to do one from each generation, and there's a time limit of 4 hours per picture, so.
Alright, so strap in. This is going to be a long video, everyone.
Alright, so your Gen 1 Pokemon that I chose for you, Omanyte, Lord Helix.
And yours is Meowth.
Meowth?
Yeah, we're starting off easy.
Yeah, this is level one. No reference picture, just art.
My biggest, fear right now is being like, oh yeah, I'm a Pokemon fan, and then, drawing everything wrong. Oh no, I feel like I should have studied for a test. I feel like I'm in school again.
Why is this so hard? He was, in every episode. Does he have a nose? I can't remember if he has a nose or not.
Lord Helix, I'm sorry.
Oh crap, oh, that's on the same layer. Oh no. Maybe since he's a villain, he should be you know?
He's a bad villain. Not bad as an evil, but,
a bad villain.
Actually bad.
When I'm gonna be editing this, I'm just gonna have a picture of it, just off to the side.
I really feel like I'm missing something, but I don't know what else to add.
I mean, it's just a shell, and then something popping out of the shell, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think I'm done.
Should we be giving any, drawing tips?
I always say practice.
That's true.
And people are like, Jaden, no, say something else. I'm like, I don't know what else to say, so you guys just have to practice.
Can't remember if Meowth has a nose. I'm looking at it with and without the nose, so. Whatever. Okay, it's done. It's fine.
Lord Helix himself.
Aww. You actually did color it.
Aww.
You're pretty spot on. Yeah. Does he have a nose?
No.
It doesn't? I'm missing, a couple of, these. Whoops. And his eyeballs are like this, you know? Yeah. Okay.
Alright, next one.
Next one. Your Gen 2 Pokemon is Houndoom. The grown-up of the Honduras? Is that the baby one?
Houndour and Houndoom.
Whatever, Pokemon Master.
And yours is Flaffy.
Flaffy?
Yeah, do you know which one that is?
Explain it.
Mareep, the sheep one.
Uh-huh.
The very first sheep?
Yeah, the pink
it's
one?
It's the second one.
Wait. So it's like a sheep. An electric sheep. And that's pink.
Yes.
I got it. A little sheep afro. Oh, I'm doing it on the same layer again. Let me just extend the canvas. Here, you know what? I need to restart, a lot of it.
I thought you were going to say, I need to research. I'm like, no. Hey!
It's the whole point of these. Is it weird that I actually sketch with a stabilizer? I think it has ears. Yeah, it totally has ears.
I know he has a skull on his chest. This looks like a seashell.
Something's off. I can't think of what, though. I know it has little, sheep fur somewhere else. I don't know.
I was just drawing Manectric yesterday, and this is the opposite. It's the fire doggo versus electric doggo.
Wait. Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about the thing I was drawing. I was like, wait, my thing's a doggo? I thought it was a sheep. Okay, I'm kind of done. I'm just...
Are you done already?
I mean, are we ever really done?
When did we start? We should, check the time every time we begin. Mine's not colored, and I think I'm missing some details, but I think it's as good as it's gonna get now.
Okay, well now I'm not done coloring it. There's totally something missing. Did I even get the color schemes right? Oh man. So this is what I drew.
Aww. It looks like cotton candy.
Yeah. Aww, yours is... That's really good. It's wearing kind of a turtleneck skeleton.
You put the fluff on the wrong side of the
belly. Oh, you're right.
Alright.
Alright.
Next one.
Next one.
Yours is... Absol.
Absol? That's the white little wolf thing, right? Yours is Flygon.
Flygon?
Yeah. Is that too easy or is that too hard? That's too hard.
Which Pokemon did you, stop playing the games at?
The third one, Ruby and Emerald. I was caught up with all the hot new trends up until the fifth one. When I was choosing your, sixth generation one, there were some that I was not recognizing.
Uh-oh, what if I chose that one? Then you're in trouble. People are gonna be like, "Ah, how do you not know who this looks like? It's easier when you watch someone do it, okay, guys?"
Aw, man.
I got the ones that were aesthetically pleasing to me.
You mean the ones that were cute? Is that just how you say it?
I was never, into the cute Pokemon. I was, the really cool ones that were, like, powerful and stuff.
I have not gotten that far into the drawing, so if, like, if we, like, cut to you and you're, like, almost done, that'd be embarrassing.
Do insects here? They have to.
Do they?
Is that a stupid question?
Got a nice little profile shot of whatever the heck this is. Oh, I'm so glad we're not recording this and putting it on the internet. I think this is my worst one. Have you seen the new Ghostbusters movie?
No, I heard it sucks.
Oh, I haven't seen it either, so.
If I had time to do line art, oh, this would look so much better.
I started doing the line art, but I shouldn't have. Okay, I'm gonna give you a secret. I haven't even seen the original Ghostbusters movie.
What?
Right? Yeah, I know. I wonder if I see this new one, since I don't have anything else to, like, judge it off of. I wonder if I'll think it's better. I shouldn't color. I shouldn't.
I heard all your undos.
Just pretend I colored in the rest of the claws. Here's what I drew. It's, oh man. Don't even give a pity. Aww. Oh wow, yours is good.
Aww.
Yours is, like, really spot on. Yeah, no, I was way off with my Absol.
If Absol had a pre-evolution, that would be it.
And it doesn't even have ears. I'm excited for this one, just because I want to see what you do. All right, yours is Licky Licky.
Ugh! Oh, no. Yours is Floatzel.
Is that the one Ash had in the cartoon? And it's like a water one?
Yeah, he had a Bweezel, which is the first one. And then it's the next one.
I don't know what that looks like.
Floatzel. Like float, and then Zell, as in pretzel. Imagine an otter, but bigger, and he's got, like, floaties on him.
This is so far not turning out that good.
Do you think they make Pokemon ugly on purpose?
No.
Do you know Probopass?
No. Is that, like, one of the new ones?
It's like a rock one with a really big nose and a mustache.
Oh, yeah.
And it's really ugly, and a lot of people don't like it.
I know a lot of people don't like the, like Garbodor? No, that's the sexy one that everyone likes. The garbage
no,
one.
No, I think it was Garbodor.
Oh. What's the sexy one likes?
What were you talking about?
I'm talking about the trash one.
I've played all of them except for Black and White 2. That was when I had my falling out. I was like, yeah. But then I came back to it.
Shoot, this is looking like a kangaroo. I kept thinking, like, there's something up here on the forehead. But I didn't know what. And you're like, you know what? I think it would look better with this. Do you think food tastes better when you didn't make it?
Yes. Isn't it like you aren't used to the smell while you're cooking? I saw another thing where, like, people would have two glasses of milk and one was dyed orange.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're like, oh, this milk tastes better, but it was the same one.
There's gotta be some way we can turn this into a competition.
Didn't, like, a whole bunch of different stuff happen with Minecraft? Now there's, like, a story now.
Oh, yeah, there's like, an end. You do it, and then, like, you can still play. I know it has the floaties. Now I'm just, like, seriously just, like, adding designs.
I'm pretty much done.
The tail always has some design on it. This is what I drew.
And this is what I drew. Ah, you keep drawing them all really cute.
Are you sure? I mean, whatever, okay. I didn't think you'd get this, but Licky Licky has a Wi-Fi symbol on him. Man, there was a lot I was missing. I knew there was something on his forehead. He doesn't have ears. Yours is Rufflet.
Oh, no.
It's a bird one. It's like a bald eagle. It's like a baby bald eagle.
Oh, okay, that helped me a lot. I was about to draw the wrong gen bird. So you have to draw Crocodile.
Is that the first one or the second one?
It's the third.
What?
Do you still know which one I'm talking about?
It's a crocodile.
Yeah, and it's red.
And it's red. And the third one, he's standing up with his arms crossed. Or my thing is the second one the one with cross arms?
Little fun fact. My first games were Ruby and Sapphire.
Uh-huh.
And my first Pokemon ever was Torchic, and that's why Torchic and Blaziken are my favorite.
Uh-huh.
In the sprite, Torchic has 1 foot up, kind of standing up. I always thought he only had 1 foot, and then he evolved, and he's like, oh, I have a foot now. I have both of them.
I always, you know, Rattatat? I always put in, like, one too many Atatas. Rat-a-tat-a-tat. Okay, I'm starting over. I know its eyes are, like, bulging. That's all I can think of.
Kind of. There's, like, a part that bulges out, but it's not his eyes.
What? I can't. Jaden, I can't. I'm just gonna draw a crocodile.
I can see the image.
Right?
In my head.
Same.
But I just can't.
But I tried to draw that twice, and I've given up.
How close are you to being done?
I mean, I can call it quits. It's so not a Pokemon. You're gonna look at it and be like, that's just a crocodile.
This is a weak round. It is a crocodile.
Yours is Inkay. Am I saying that right?
Yours is Noivern.
What is that one? Oh, is it the bat one? That new bat one?
Yeah, and he's got, like, the ears.
Oh, he does have ears. The one that I saw that I, like, I've never seen that before. It was hands coming out of a rock. Like, if you held that one up and, like, a Digimon and you said, which one's the Pokemon? I'd be like, neither of them are Pokemon. This is not right, but I don't care. I'm making it cute.
I wonder how many people are going to dislike this just because we frustrated them.
Like, I'm not taking it seriously anymore. This is why you need drawing references.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with drawing references. I saw a comment one time, and it was like, Jaden, you use references to draw your Pokemon. I'm like,
yeah.
What else? Why are you mad at me? Oh, this is going pretty well. And then I just, like, stopped and looked at it, and I'm like, oh, this doesn't look right.
I'm not making it look cool. I'm making it look derpy. All right, and then it totally has little bat wings. Throw designs on the wall, see what sticks.
This poor thing.
Perfect. I'm done. All right, this is what I drew.
This is what I drew.
Aw.
Aw! Every time I see him, it's just adorable.
Thanks. Okay, the nose is not right. And man, his wings are a lot crazier than I thought.
You got the, like, the V on his face.
So these were my Pokemon. This one's not really a Pokemon. That one didn't count. What have we learned, Jaden?
Reference photos are important.
Thanks for watching. Yeah, if you haven't seen Jaden's video, you should.
Please.
I don't know if you could tell, but we kind of did a collab.
Bye.
Bye. Wear your seatbelt.
Do you guys remember Jay from the Suabway videos? I basically said he believed in zodiac signs and chakras and third eyes. See, I'm someone who doesn't really believe in that sort of stuff. Oh, hey, Black Sen.
Hey, James.
So Jay was trying to teach me about energies and vibrations, and he told me about this YouTube channel called Infinite Waters, parentheses, diving deep. Now on this channel, you will see videos like what I eat in a day as a vegan, how to stop burning bridges with people, 7 amazing tips that will turn you into a self-loving whiz. But he also has videos like how to open your third eye. So I don't necessarily agree with everything he says on his videos, but I really like him and you should check him out. And the creator of these videos, named Ralph, I just love how he starts off every single video. He goes, peace, infinite waters, diving deep once again. Can I get a hello there? And it is super peaceful and I recommend it. And on a lot of his videos, he talks about doing a
7-day vegan challenge. 7-day vegan challenge. 7-day vegan challenge. 7-day vegan challenge.
You know, for the amount of times you bring up
the 7-day vegan challenge,
you'd think it would solve all your problems. Which is why I, James, have decided to partake in the 7-day vegan challenge. But I'm gonna call it the 7-day vegan challenge, baby. Solves all your problems. Can't get enough sleep? 7-day vegan challenge, baby. Can't find your car keys? 7-day vegan challenge, baby. People keep interrupting you? You wanna die? 7-day vegan challenge, baby. All these lame-o pleb YouTubers doing these lame-o pleb challenges, like, why does this exist? While they're doing this, I'm actually going out of my way to suffer for a whole week for views. I did some research into what was vegan, and apparently Reese's Puffs and Oreos are vegan.
Well, this is gonna be super easy.
As of recording this, I have already completed the 7-day vegan challenge, and I've kind of delayed making this video because being a vegan has changed me. So while I was doing the 7-day vegan challenge, I wrote this log after each day. I'm not going to read all of it, just the first and last day of the challenge, because days 2 through 6 can pretty much be summed up in So this is what I wrote at the end of day 1. My rations are already very low. I was not prepared for this. I'm the kind of person that will snack on Cheez-Its and trail mix throughout the day. But now I can't do that. Because I have to think of the freaking animals. Every time I'm around food, I just have to keep screaming, vegan, vegan, in my mind so I won't unconsciously take a handful of Cheez-Its. I went shopping for food today, and everything I wasn't allowed to eat looked super good. I was even craving the food that I've never bought before, like Hot Pockets. Who likes Hot Pockets? I accidentally bought bread that contained honey, which I don't know if that's vegan or not. If we've learned anything from the bee movie is that bees have no purpose if they're not making honey. I'm in for a long week. I'm already fantasizing about what I'll eat as soon as the challenge is over. I'm thinking a 4x4 from In-N-Out. I'll try to write tomorrow. And then after that long week was over, this is what I wrote for day 7. In a few hours, all my problems will be fixed, and I will be an immortal being. But I'm going to throw that all away because tomorrow I'm going to drink milk again. I've completed the vegan challenge, but I don't feel that accomplished. The best way I can think to describe what I'm feeling is, oh, it's over. I remember when I started the challenge, I was thinking about all the food I was going to eat once I was done, but now I'm just not craving anything. Still, though, I'm probably never going to do this again. While I was doing the challenge, I went to Sprouts and bought microwavable veggie burgers, and when I cooked them up, they smelled like throw-up. So see if you can tell how much I was trying to hold back throwing up in this video.
So today, we were going to try these veggie burgers, and as I was cooking it, it sort of smelled like throw-up. And it almost made me throw up. So we have the burgers and tomatoes and lettuce. Oh, okay. I'm really hungry right now. Here's a veggie burger. We're gonna try this. We're gonna try and eat this. Hopefully, it, you know, tastes better than it smells.
By the way, that was vegan cheese in the video. I didn't just put normal cheese on the veggie burger, guys. Okay, I'm not a heartless creature. I care about cows. You know, the internet really loves to just hate on vegans. But I don't think it's as bad as the internet makes it out to be. Of course, there will always be jerks in any group of people. And you shouldn't think that you're better than someone else just because of what you eat. Also, I want to mention that while I did the vegan challenge, I would lose my breath just by going up the stairs. Some vegans would probably say that I was malnourished. And I probably was. This video is probably going to get some downvotes from some angry vegans, even though I'm about to compliment them. I think it takes a lot of self-control to do what vegans do. I don't know why anyone would purposely do that. I admire anyone that puts so much care and thought into their diet. I mean, ever since the challenge was finished, I've been trying to eat healthier, and I don't want to brag or anything, but I bought whole wheat waffles the other day, so I can feel my bones getting stronger. So, in conclusion, unfortunately, the 7-day vegan challenge, baby, solves all your problems. Did not solve all my problems. But even if it did solve all my problems, I still probably wouldn't be vegan. I would still drink milk. You know, because that's what makes ice cream and cheese and nachos. You think I'm exaggerating, but no, you would have to pay me a very pretty penny to get me to be full vegan. Like, no joke, a minimum of $1 billion. Am I glad I did the 7-day vegan challenge? Yes, I am.
Then we got some organic pancake syrup. I think pancake syrup itself is organic too, but we're just going to eat it again. Look, where does it say it? Non-GMO. 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 I haven't had a GMO in days.
Quick, what do we know about goats?
They stiffen up and fall over when they're scared?
Good, what else? Ooh, I know! Their kids have the same name as our kids. Which is kids.
Yeah, that does open the door for some pretty hilarious puns. Anything else? Yes, you in the back?
You don't want to stare into their eyes for too long.
Well, class, I'll admit, you do know a bit about goats. But you're all forgetting the most iconic goat fact of all. You know, their goats scream. Anyone who's anyone who knows anything about goats know that these rectangle-eyed demons make weird human-sounding screams. And we all find these little freaks of nature so funny that screaming goats get referenced in all sorts of media, like commercials and movies. And are still getting referenced as recently as 2024. So why then did Peter Griffin call this a sheep?
Sorry guys, somebody emailed me a video of a sheep screaming.
Now that I think about it, Conan O'Brien called this a sheep too.
There's a viral video going around of a sheep. This is real.
And if this really is a goat, why is the original video called The Screaming Sheep?
And I've never, ever in my life seen a sheep or met a sheep that sounds like this.
Take a good look because this is the face that will haunt your dreams.
What did you see?
Lamb. Ah! They were screaming.
That was the worst Super Bowl call in the history of the Super
Bowl. Sorry to burst the bubble, children.
People are saying it's fake and that it's dubbed over.
It's good.
This is real.
Chapter 1. Why did we all think this was a goat? This has to be like one of them Mandela effects, right? You're telling me this unedited 6-second video that shaped an entire generation's perception of what the common barn animal goats scream like wasn't even a f***ing goat? Someone's been pulling the wool over all of our eyes. Or maybe the original poster is deceptive and untrustworthy, and this really is a goat.
Hey, I'm not gonna stand for you questioning the integrity of the original poster! They would never lie to us!
Okay, let's see. All the other videos on their channel are of sheep. In fact, it's only sheep. I can't even find one stinking goat on this whole stinking farm. And if we get real investigating and use an internet archive, we can clearly see that the video was always called The Screaming Sheep. But I'm positive it's screaming goats we love so much, because if you type screaming goats into Amazon, you get all of the screaming goat merch, and if you type screaming sheep, you get all of the screaming goat merch. And, just because I have another example, in the Shaun the Sheep movie, they had a whole farm of sheep that any one of could have screamed, but it's the one and only goat character that goes... Granted, the sheep in the original video was just recently sheared, so I understand that it doesn't immediately give "this is a sheep" vibes, but were Peter Griffin and Conan O'Brien really the only ones who read the title while the rest of us collectively thought, I think I know what a goat sounds like, and that is definitely a goat. How did we get from a 6-second video of a screaming sheep to all these goats? Chapter 2, The Beginning. According to this Google Trends graph, from 2005 to 2008, no one gave a shit about screaming goats. And that makes sense. No one knew they could do that. But then, just at the start of the 2008 housing market crash, we see a little bump. I believe this is because videos of animals making unexpected sounds was kind of the thing back then. Videos like Man Goat and Man Argues with Spitting Goat made the rounds from 2008 to 2011, but their success kind of stayed on the internet, you know? Like, they were funny videos, but nothing I'd make a commercial about. 2012 rolled around, and people were done with screaming goats. But one user still had hope that, in time, people would once again care about screaming hooved animals. On the 8th of April, 2012, while everyone was enjoying a nice Easter Sunday on the Screaming Sheep Farms, the YouTube user AJQ2891 captured the exact moment that their recently sheared Oxford sheep Ophelia let out a humorous and completely genuine scream. Then, for the rest of the day, they painted eggs or something, I don't know. But then, on the very next day, AJ posted the video for the entire world to witness Ophelia's monumental sheep scream. And almost overnight, the video would be seen by no one. And it would stay that way for the next 5 months, until one day when the video would fall upon the eyes of a Redditor. And baby, I'm low on karma. Ophelia's video got posted on Reddit, and then reposted on Reddit, and then seemingly overnight, Ophelia the Screaming Sheep went viral. Ophelia was so beloved that she found herself off the internet too, on places like Conan and this British show RudeTube that I couldn't find clips for because I'm not British. With Screaming Sheep being the next viral sensation, AJQ quickly ran out to the farm, recorded another hilarious scream of Ophelia, and managed to record some of their screaming lambs. Guess that's why it's called the Screaming Sheep Farms. You know, just every animal here has a weird, unnatural scream. Honestly, it's a nightmare to live here. Also, we know it's Ophelia who stars in The Screaming Sheep 2 because we can see she's wearing the same ear tags in both videos. That, and she screams, like, identically in both videos. But that makes sense. You know, it's the same sheep, so of course it's going to sound the same. You know how consistent a sheep's screams are these days. We're not really going to be looking a whole lot at these two videos, but they're going to be important later on, so just keep them in the back of your mind. Things were looking great for our girl. She was beloved by millions of people who all found joy in listening to the soothing sounds of her completely genuine sheep scream. Chapter 3. Seriously, why did we all think this was a goat? I wasn't able to find the original Reddit post that exploded Ophelia into stardom, but we do know a Reddit post did exist because it was mentioned in the Screaming Sheep NFT description. Okay. Apparently, a lot of old viral videos are now non-fungible tokens. I don't really want to get into that right now. If we instead just shift our focus to the NFT's description, we find a lot of useful information. Like, this is the only place I've found where we learn Ophelia's real name. I'm hoping it's accurate. Now, this might just be how I read things, but when I read, "This is Ophelia. I filmed the Screaming Sheep Easter morning," I was under the impression Ophelia was the name of the person recording, AJQ. Luckily, we have the Screaming Sheep 2's NFT description to clear things up. See, I told you those videos are going to be important later on. Ophelia, the sheep featured in the original, is also the star of this video. Oh, I get it now. This is Ophelia. Like you're pointing at her. This is Ophelia. Hi, Ophelia. Anyways, getting back to that uncredited Reddit post, I was able to find this Reddit post from September 7th, 2012, but I have reasons to believe it still wasn't the Reddit post. However, this post does give us some valuable insight into what a viral Ophelia Reddit post may have looked like. Already, there were a surprising amount of people who were commenting things like, "Take my upvote, kind stranger. Hey, you know what this video reminds me of? A different screaming goat video!" Since there had already been a precedent of goats being the common barn animal that made weird, unnatural screams, and because Ophelia had the most goat-looking haircut that day, that if someone told you, "This is a goat," you would believe them unquestionably, because why would someone lie about that? Turns out, people lied about it. Ophelia's video was featured in multiple and extremely popular goat screaming like people compilations. And I can't really blame the people who made these compilations because they couldn't make a whole separate sheep scream like people compilation. I've only found one other video of a sheep screaming that wasn't on AJQ's channel. And that's not enough to make a whole compilation. Misinformation about Ophelia's species was rampant. No one had an NFT description to fact check because, honestly, the concept of that is kind of insane. They just had to trust reputable news sources like Anderson Cooper to get his facts right. And even he couldn't do that!
Now, I've seen a lot of creepy goats on YouTube, like this one.
Chapter 4. I knew you were trouble. In February 2013, the YouTube user Goosick had the brilliant idea of editing Ophelia's scream over a popular Taylor Swift song. Huh, don't you wish you thought of something like that, AJQ? Replacing the audio of something with a goofier and unexpected sound? People are so creative. I wish I could show you the specific edit that I'm talking about, but I know Miss Swift won't like it if I play even a second of her song, so we're just gonna have to do this. Never mind, I don't want to do this. I'm just going to assume you've already seen the edit that I'm talking about because it was viewed by everyone. Everyone saw this edit. Taylor Swift saw this edit. And she liked it.
It's good.
I know I don't usually tell stories about my personal life, but if you'll allow me this one time, I remember one night in 2013 being at a high school dance, and the Taylor Swift goat song came on, and right when the beat dropped, all the teachers supervising hadn't a clue why the entire school screamed. It was because we were all mimicking that hilarious screaming sheep. Now, the issue with all of this is that Goosick titled their video, "I Knew You Were a Goat When You Walked In." So history's changed forever. February 2013 was the start of the screaming goat meme. During this time, there were plenty of real videos of real goats making real screams that were also shared and beloved by people. But there's no denying that Ophelia's scream was the goat of goat screams. And she's not even a goat! YouTubers react to goat remixes! Commercials featuring screaming goats! Hey, what animal did they get in YouTube Rewind 2013 to scream? Oh, that's right, it was the goat! As much as AJQ tried to remind people of Ophelia's species in the description, the damage was already done, and the meme had gone completely out of their control. You might think that, like any other meme, people would have their fun with it, but eventually, they'd move on. But that didn't happen with this particular meme. No, Ophelia's goat scream was about to find a new home in Hollywood. In November 2014, something happened that caused people's interest in screaming goats to massively spike up. And I have no clue what caused that. I don't know.
It's one of those unsolvable mysteries, I suppose. Look, in all of my research, I couldn't find anything significant that would have caused this massive spike. So think back. Did you ever use Google to search for screaming goats in November 2014? And if so, why? But while we're looking at the Google Trends graph, only 3 months later, we see another bigger peak in interest at February 2015. And I think I know what caused that. If I had to pick the most important date in screaming goat history, February 1st, 2015 would be like in the top five. Solid A tier for sure. On that specific Sunday, three different companies all released commercials referencing screaming goats. How did I know it was Sunday? Because it was Super Bowl Sunday, baby! You know, the season finale of football that gets around 114 million viewers? It's such an important football game that companies will pay top dollar for a couple seconds of ad space. And the 2015 Super Bowl, Super Bowl Xlix, aired two Screaming Goat commercials. One of them just using the original clip of Ophelia, which I'm still counting as a Screaming Goat commercial because the iSpot.tv page for this ad credits Ophelia as a goat. And that third non-Super Bowl commercial was just part of a Geico campaign, and they played a different ad from that campaign at the Super Bowl, but could you imagine if they played the goat one instead? That would have been so cool. Now, a new and bigger audience of people, people who watch sports, all believe that goats are the ones who scream like that. The reason this Super Bowl is so important to the screaming goat historian community is because this was the game that every animation studio executive watched and simultaneously agreed that screaming goats were the funniest, freshest thing ever. Think about it. You're an animation studio executive. You see two Screaming Goat commercials during the same football game. A couple days later, you see a third Screaming Goat commercial. Hey, isn't it almost Chinese New Year? What animal is it this time? Oh, that would be the year of the goat! Within the next three-ish years, Screaming Goats were referenced in animated movies at a rate I've never seen memes get referenced in animated movies before. You couldn't escape screaming goats if you tried. Thor 4 beat you over the head with them, and they might be in Marvel Rivals, but I couldn't get these goats to scream when I played.
Come on, scream! Scream!
My theory is that people complained about it, so they took it out. But now I'm going to complain about it for them to put it back in. And it really gets my goat that goats are remembered as the common barn animal who make that iconic scream. And it's unfair that calling someone a goat is a compliment, but calling someone a sheep is an insult. Goats have already taken enough from sheep. I need to calm down. So, what do you say, Ophelia? Think you can belt one more out for us? For old time's sake? Come on, girl. Do the scream!
Yeah.
What was that?
Yeah.
Stop that.
Yeah.
Ophelia, why aren't you screaming? You were the one who screamed in the original video, right?
Yeah.
Chapter 6, working title, Deception. I'm not proud to admit this, but sometimes I'll watch a video at 2x speed. You know, like an iPad kid. But then YouTube will remember I did that and think I want to watch every video that fast. So it wasn't that jarring when I pulled up the original video and noticed Ophelia was obviously sped up. It only became jarring when I realized the video was playing at the normal speed. I caught this on like my 40th rewatch, but this is clearly sped up, right? I didn't do anything to this. This is how the clip has always been. So that means at some point, this video was put into a video editing software and underwent video manipulation. But that doesn't automatically mean Ophelia didn't hilariously scream. AJ just wanted us to hear the scream sooner. That's why they sped up the footage. And, okay, I will admit that it is a little weird that at the start of the video we can hear the background noises like the wind and other farm animals. But when Ophelia starts screaming, everything kind of just cuts out. But that's probably just because Ophelia screamed so loudly that it drowned out all the background noise. I don't know what a spectrogram is, and all right, I do find it intriguing that Ophelia's scream sounds identical to the scream this cartoon fox made in the short film Pop by Bernard Dairyman. that came out 2 years before AJ's video, but maybe Bernard just used a recording of his own Oxford sheep. You know how similar a sheep's screams are these days. I, for one, would never accuse AJQ of faking this important piece of history that has brought joy to millions of— What's that? They already found the source of the original scream? Stock sound effect from Apple released in 2008? Yeah, can I call you back? So that means it was never a screaming goat. It's always been a silent sheep. A classic example of a lie within a lie. I, of course, was not the first person to crack this case. People were suspicious of Ophelia's authenticity within the first 5 YouTube comments. No, the diligent internet detective who cracked this case and found the original scream was none other than—
Well, I'm sorry to burst the bubble, children, but those are sound effects.
So now he's involved in all of this. He's gonna need his own page on the wiki. If this is how you found out that one screaming goat video from 2012 is fake, I'm sorry. I know getting lied to is upsetting, but try imagining what it would feel like if everyone thought you were a goat when really you were a sheep. You know what else is fake? Most of the things on the internet. But you know what's not fake? The smiles Ophelia gave you. If AJQ told us from the very beginning that the video was edited, why can't I say that? Would we have even listened to them? We didn't listen the whole time they told us Ophelia was a sheep. I don't think I could sum up my thoughts any better than the YouTube user Just Bored puts it. No sh**'s fake. This is just supposed to be funny. So the next time you inevitably see a screaming goat referenced in an animated movie, I hope you cringe, not because the joke isn't funny, but because you know it was never a goat that made that sound. But rather, a sheep that also never made that sound.
Chapter 7. Other things I wanted to mention but couldn't find a good spot for them, so I'm just going to list them off while opening Screaming Goat merch. In YouTube Rewind 2013, they got goats to reference Ophelia's sheep scream, but they also had a goat make this sound, which is referencing a different viral video called Yeah Lamb.
Yeah.
So in YouTube Rewind 2013, they had goats steal the spotlight from not only sheep, but also lambs. You're how old? Oh my, it moves. The very first screaming goat reference in media I could find was on May 9th, 2015, from episode 25 of Sonic Boom. In case you needed an emergency goat. Ooh, what's in my hand? And then there's also this one. Have you ever made this sound? We have the screaming goat button that needs batteries. Wait, no, I just need to pull this. That was anticlimactic. Oh, wait, I need to turn it on. Okay, now.
Star, can you do the honors?
The Screaming Sheep 1 NFT was sold at 2.9 Ethereum, which I believed influenced AJQ to sell the Screaming Sheep 2 NFT at 10 times the price, starting the bid at 29 Ethereum. And if you think it's crazy, someone would pay 10 times the amount for a viral, I can't read the card. If you think it's crazy that someone would spend 10 times as much on a sequel to a viral video, then you're absolutely right, because no one bought the NFT. Except for right now, you're looking at the proud owner of the Screaming Sheep 2, and I'm just kidding, I didn't do that. I said screening. I'm here with Scout, the mother of Star from Party Goats LA. Have you heard of a goat make that sound before?
I have heard something similar, like if they're okay. In distress, especially if they get left alone. Mm-hmm. Here's a fun fact for you. The way you can tell the difference between a goat and a sheep is actually by looking at their upper lip. Ooh. Goat's upper lip is not split. The sheep's upper lip is split, and that helps them eat grasses. And it's actually called the philtrum. But goats don't have it. So if you ever have a question, just look at their upper lip. And if it's split and it looks like it's just kind of a cleft right there, right under their nose, that's how you can tell the difference.
Star, what do you think?
We are Party Goats LA. We do all kinds of things, everything goat and sheep related here in Los Angeles. We do brush clearance, parties, events, send a surprise goat with our goat gram, goat yoga, hiking with goats. pretty much anything people want to do.
Hey, thanks for watching this video. Big thanks to everyone who worked on this video and made it possible. They're amazing. And you're amazing. And now you're off into the world, knowing that it was never a goat that made that sound. So, you know, take with that with what you will. See you around. Wear your seatbelt. Love yourself. Have a good night.
There are three major milestones that every YouTuber can get to. The first is when they get 1 million subscribers. The second one is when they get their content either stolen or reacted to by a big reaction channel. And the third is when there is fan fiction written about them. Well, ladies and gentlemen, today we have the first fan fiction written about me. I have done a read-through where I read this fanfiction blind and unscripted, but it kind of took a little too long, and I don't want to sound ungrateful, but it wasn't the best. I mean, the beginning was good. The middle was and you kind of lost me at the end. So I'm only going to be reading part of it and summarizing the rest of it. So let's begin. I wake up crying, knowing that today is the day James is going to be leaving for a camping trip. Why am I so obsessed with this boy? I mean, we're both only 12. Why am I only 12?
This isn't creepy at all.
I shake the thought of him making me go crazy, knowing I won't be able to watch him and make sure he's safe while he's gone. I put on my clothes, walking over to his house, scared that he already left. I move over to the corner of the house, watching him put all of his gear in his car, his white skin shining in the Arizona sun. I look at the trunk of the car, open and filled with gear, and out of pure desperation to always be with James, I quickly run into the trunk of the car, hiding under all of James's stuff.
That's very impressive for a 12-year-old.
My eyes widen, not regretting a thing. I hear the car start before driving off. I get excited before grabbing one of James's duffel bags, opening the bag, and looking through. My eyes widen, seeing James's underpants before taking it. I will cherish this forever, I say, holding it close to my heart. So then we arrive at the campsite, and the stowaway runs out and hides behind a tree, watching me and saying, "Now's my chance. He will notice me." But then, for some reason, she falls asleep. She sleeps for the entire day, and then when she wakes up, she goes through my tent and finds all my Axe deodorant. Which, I'm just gonna point something out, I don't like Axe deodorant. Come on, get your fanfictions right. And then she says, "Senpai smell." I say with joy, just spraying a little as the scent of James washes over my body. I let out a soft moan before craving more. Then, for some reason, it switches to both of us in school? Like, if you want to write a semi-erotic fanfiction about stalking me, go right ahead. But at least make the story make sense. It's 7th grade, and I have followed my senpai everywhere. I go the look of him driving me crazy with lust every time he talks to a girl, the anger driving me crazy. So then she ties in the part where I give my first comic I made to a girl. Sick reference, bro. So I give the comic to the other girl, and then the girl in the story says, "Senpai!" But I couldn't get mad at Senpai. I was only mad at the girl, my eyes widen, grinning, following the girl, watching and waiting. So then I think she steals the comic. And then we go back camping? For some reason? Keep your story straight, man! I wake up already knowing James is going to be gone again, on another camping trip. I lurk on top of the trees. What? On top of the trees? A few hours pass before I wake up. You just woke up a few sentences ago! To already find everyone there and unpacked. My eyes widen before seeing James on the cliff, as I scream knowing he could hurt himself. I bite my nails, watching, screaming with each jump. I must help Senpai! Then she ties in the time when I pushed Harris off a cliff, in one of my older videos. It was into a lake, okay? I didn't just push him off a cliff, okay? We were cliff diving. Then I think I save her from falling or something, but then she swims away? I start to climb down before swimming far away from the campsite. My only energy is the thought of James, my eyes exhausted in the heat of the Arizona sun. Waiting for my senpai James to show up, even the thought of him makes my heart beat fast. Then we go back to school, for some reason. She tries to fit in as many references as she can. I'm not expecting everyone watching this to have seen all my videos, but there's a reference to my PE video, my 5-hour energy video, my ASMR video. She calls me senpai a lot. A lot. And it ends with, I move back into the closet, closing the door. You will be mine. Whoever made this, can you tell me how old you are? You know I'm almost 20, right? I just need to make sure you're not a minor. For legal reasons. So I cut out a lot of the fanfiction, but the author uses the word senpai 18 times and the phrase eyes widen 10 times. So that's about 2% of the fanfiction is either the words eyes widen or senpai.
I think we humans find things covered in hair more cute. We're more attracted to things covered in hair. And that's why I'm a furry.
Hey, James!
Hey! Furby. Everyone's gonna put on $2,000 animal costumes and walk around. Do you wanna come?
No.
But don't let me stop you from this hobby of yours. I may not understand why you like it, but as long as you're not harassing or hurting anyone, or anything, then do whatever makes you happy. Also, shower regularly and eat your vegetables. So, in the last video, I made a haha joke about being a furry. I said given the choice between an animal with fur and one without fur, that most people would think the animal covered in fur would be cuter. And, ha, if we applied that logic to people, then everyone would be a furry. I got a mixed bag of responses to that joke.
Okay, I was looking at all the comments about James saying he's a furry, and in my opinion, it shouldn't matter. If James is a furry and he told you, that means he trusts you and thinks that you would accept him the way he is.
I don't care, I'm not watching him anymore.
Well, that's really nice of you, Mr. Branch. But I still don't trust you. A lot of people were confused, so for the remainder of this video, every time I make a joke, it will be followed by this message. Two muffins are in an oven. One says, "Boy, it's hot in here." And the other says, "Yeah, you live in Arizona, what'd you expect?" But I'd say, for the most part, you guys were very accepting. So that's good to know if I ever do want to come out as something. But if we wanted to talk about someone who is a furry, then look no further than 600 BC. You have to look pretty far. What am I talking about? I'm talking about this man named Aesop. Aesop. Aesap. Aesuabway. This man was the world's first furry. Okay, I'm calling him a furry because he wrote a lot of fables with talking animals in them, so I'm making fun of him for writing a lot of furry fanfiction.
I'm making fun of a dead person.
I made a video about a year and a half ago reading some of Aesop's fables, and that video is what this official Odd Ones Out shirt is referencing. Fables are short stories, usually with talking animals, that have a moral at the end. Characters in fables don't have names. They're just simple, cookie-cutter characters. You don't have a fable with Michelangelo and Raphael from the Ninja Turtles. No, you have a fable with the tortoise and the other tortoise. So I'm going to read some more of Aesop's fables, but I'll be focusing on just one character. The fox. The fox gets around. You could pick any animal, and a fable exists with that animal being taken advantage of by a fox. The fox and the triceratops. That fable probably exists. With the amount of fables the fox has been in, you'd expect him to be more moral than Gandhi. Aesop really liked foxes. His persona was probably a fox.
The fox and the goat.
So once there was this fox eating some cheese, he wasn't looking where he was going, and he fell down a well. The fox had no way of getting out. Then a goat just so happened to be walking by and said, "Hey, what are you doing down there, you silly goose?" "Actually, I'm a fox," said the fox. "I was just drinking some of this lovely water. Is it good?" "Oh, it's only the best water in the entire universe." So the goat decided to jump down and join the fox. But then the fox used the goat. He used her as a stepping stool to get out of the well.
The website I'm reading this from has an interactive picture that shows the events that happened. Let's watch.
So then the goat says, "Whoa, buckaroo, aren't you gonna help me out?"
No.
Instead, I'm gonna teach you a moral. If you had as much sense as you have beard, you would have been more cautious about finding a way to get out again before you jumped in. Look before you leap, you stupid idiot. Okay, goodbye. But fox, you fell into the well too. You were the one not looking. The goat looked, you just lied to her. And you got away with it. So the real moral of the story is, you can abuse the people in your life with no consequences, as long as they end up dead in a well. The fox and the crab. This fable is pretty short. Once there was a crab who was tired of living next to sand, so he decided to move to a meadow.
And then a fox ate him.
That's the real fable! It counted as one of Aesop's 665. And the moral is, be content with your lot. Don't move, don't travel, don't try and live in a better location because a fox might eat you! Just live in your studio apartment and deal with it! The lion, the bear, and the fox. This baby goat, he's a kid, went up to a lion and a bear and said, "Have you seen my mom? I haven't seen her in a couple of weeks. She said she was going to get some water and a pack of smokes, and she hasn't come home." But the bear and the lion didn't care. They started fighting each other over who would get to eat the baby goat. And then a fox jumped out of the bushes, killed the kid, and ran off with it. I wonder how much Aesop got paid for these. Again, the website has a very nifty interactive picture that shows you exactly what occurred. And the moral of the story? Those who have all the toil do not always get the profit. I'm not exactly sure what that means. Seems to me the moral should be,
don't talk to lions and bears, and watch out for foxes. The fox and the grapes. Basically, what happens in this fable was that once there were some grapes growing on a really tall tree. Do grapes grow on really tall trees? Maybe they did in 600 BC. And the fox really wanted some of the grapes. Do foxes like grapes? Maybe they did in 600 BC. And so he tried to get them himself, but he couldn't reach them. And since the fox didn't want to ask for help, probably because all the other animals hated him, he said, "Eh, I didn't want your sour grapes anyway." There are many who pretend to despise and belittle that which is beyond their reach. Which is where I think the phrase, money is the root of all evil, came from. People were upset that they couldn't get money, so they just said, "Eh, I didn't want your evil money anyway." Okay, here's the last fable. This one's kinda sad. The fox and the scorpion. So the fox, this whole time, had been gathering ingredients to make the perfect sandwich. He got the meat from an orphaned goat, a sautéed depressed crab, and some cheese. He was also going to get a side of grapes, but he decided to go without them. When all of a sudden, a scorpion comes up to him and said, "Hey, can I get a ride across the river? I'm too small to swim across." "Ha! Nice try, Slick! If I gave you a ride, you'd just sting me." No, if I did that, we'd both drown. It would be a lose-lose. "Yeah, right, I'll help you out. I've been acting like a huge jerk lately, all to make this one sandwich. But I'm gonna change starting now. For once, I'm gonna be helpful." So the fox gives the scorpion a ride, when all of a sudden... "Why'd you sting me?"
"Because I'm a scorpion. It's in my nature."
"Yeah, but you're a talking scorpion! I thought you'd have enough cognitive sense to know not to do that!
You even said yourself that if you stung me, we'd both die."
"Actually, I can hold my breath for 6 days."
"What?"
"Yeah, watch."
"My sandwich."
And then the fox died. He had no family, no friends, and no sandwich. And that's why you never help scorpions.
Lied to you guys! I pranked you! This fable wasn't the fox and the scorpion, it's actually the frog and the scorpion. The fox never got stung. He knows better than to help out another creature. Fox is too busy looking out for number one, baby! The frog's dead, though. And if it makes you happy, the scorpion died too. And the fox got to enjoy his sandwich. Still alone, but... the end! Man, what a plot twist! Aren't I so good at telling stories? So what did we learn, children? We learned, don't ask for help, don't help out others, lie to people, take what you want, and you'll succeed.
Parents want their children to be well-rounded. But the problem that every parent faces is that 7-year-olds would rather watch any video on YouTube than learn how to play the violin. So, how do these concerned parents get their children to be more active? Answer, they force them. Now, forcing your kids into activities isn't a bad thing. In fact, overall, it's extremely helpful. Forcing kids into doing something they don't want to do is the only way we can get them to go to school. Okay, saying that out loud kind of sounded wrong. Doing extra activities, especially at a young age, not only teaches you important skills, but it also teaches you what your interests are. How are you gonna know if you don't like ballet unless you try it? I've tried it, and now I can say with confidence, ballet is not for me. I'm sure I'm not the only one who's had to deal with parents signing you up for sports, instruments, and more sports. I think when you're really young, you don't realize that you have a choice. Your parents just start taking you to soccer practice every Wednesday, and you think, "Oh, okay, I guess I'm doing this now." But all the activities I was forced into, while I never got invested in any of them, I'm still glad I did them, you know? I forgot how old I was when my mom signed me up for soccer, but I was little enough for the goals to look like this. I can't tell you how many games you won or how many goals I scored. It was probably close to zero. Because I ultimately didn't care about soccer. The only thing I cared about was getting a treat after every game. Because I earned it. I know some kids who really enjoyed playing soccer. I forget which video I mentioned this, but back in the day, there was this kid I knew named Micah. He used to live in the house directly behind mine, and we were on the same Little League soccer team. He was really good at soccer, probably better than I'll ever be, and he still plays to this day. Well, okay, it's been 4 years since I last talked to him, but he was still playing soccer to this 4 years ago. Now, did Micah's parents initially force him into playing soccer? Probably, I didn't ask. But if his parents never forced him into it, he would have never known how good he was at the game and how much he enjoyed it. But that's enough about Micah. This is my channel. I don't remember how I stopped playing soccer. I just stopped showing up to the practices 1 year, and then I never played again. And then my mom put me into Boy Scouts, and that was a lot better because it wasn't competitive and camping is awesome and I made some dumb videos about it. So it was a return investment. Another activity my mom put me in was this martial art class called Aikido. I'm honestly surprised I've gotten 107 videos without mentioning Aikido once. Probably because it was boring and nothing interesting happened. My mom put me and my twin sister into Aikido, and we both agreed that it was boring and we didn't like it, so we decided not to remind my mom whenever she had to take us to class, and surprisingly, she forgot most of the time. Okay, look, whenever the sensei was talking, we had to sit on our knees, and that gets uncomfortable after 2 seconds. What is Aikido, I hear you asking? Aikido is a special form of martial arts in that it doesn't teach you how to fight. Aikido is all about self-defense and to also not hurt the attacker. You know those self-defense techniques that are like, if someone tries to attack you, use your keys as a knife and stab them? Aikido is not that. An Aikido master will take an attacker's arm, spin them around, and then pin them down to the floor. Now that sounds really cool on rice paper, like if someone goes to attack you, and then you block their punch and pin them to the ground, and you just give them a look like, you wanna take me on, kid? I've already got you pinned down. Now I'm not gonna hurt you, cause I'm that powerful. But if you ever attempt to attack me or my clan ever again, I will be forced to use 10% of my power and break your spine in half. And I think my mom saw that Aikido was non-violent and taught self-defense, and she thought it was a better activity than learning how to kick someone in the face. But after doing some research on Aikido, I've learned that it's not really, what's the right word, respected in the martial art community. There's a lot of people saying that the techniques of Aikido don't work against a real attack, and that if someone's really attacking you, you can't reasonably pin them down without hurting them, so it's probably a better idea to just punch back. And some people who are in Aikido think that their style of fighting is more civil and the more eloquent way of fighting, or non-fighting, so there's a tad bit of elitism in the martial art community. Now, surprisingly, I've never been in a real fight, so I can't really comment on what the more effective martial art is. I'm sure different situations call for different responses, but I don't think I'm wrong when I say that Aikido is the vegans of martial arts. After Aikido, the next thing I was forced to learn was an instrument. My parents didn't force me to do this, it was the